final hour. Darren Donick and Chase on this gorgeous Thursday here in Nashville. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you. And every Thursday at this time, we always enjoy our chats with Elliot Freeman. He now joins us. He's presented by Bank of England Mortgage. Don't forget, Predators hosting the Winnipeg Jets Saturday night. It'll be Hockey Night in Canada. A little bit earlier start, 6 o'clock puck drop. Pete Weber and Hal Gill will have your call on these airwaves. I will have pregame for you starting at 5 o'clock from Patron Platinum Club. Looking forward to that. Elliot, how the heck are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Well, it sounds like we're doing better than right now up in Canada. In the last 24 hours, you guys are getting a little antsy with your head coaches. I don't know what's going on.
It's like Black Monday in the NFL.
Yes. So yesterday Montreal, today Edmonton.
Yeah, it's, you know, I got to tell you, it's the Montreal one I saw coming because I think they had to do something. I didn't see who was coming in. Like anybody who says to you that they predicted that beforehand is a total, total liar. And I will say this, like Martin St-Louis is very tight with Jeff Gorton and Kent Hughes, who are running the organization now. And he's someone they both really believe in. You know, Martin St-Louis, when Jeff Gorton was the GM of the Mets, the Rangers, there was a time when he talked to St-Louis about joining as a coach. And St-Louis, I think he has three boys who play hockey, and he wasn't ready. It was a bad time for him. And Kent Hughes and one of St-Louis' sons are both in college together at Northeastern, and their sons played together on a national development team in the States, and I think they owned a property together in Michigan while their kids were playing together. So there's a lot of history there. And maybe I should have done a better job of fleshing it out and thinking that was a possibility, but I didn't think that. I always thought of St-Louis as a family man, but he's got one kid in university. He's got another kid who's ready to go. And, you know, I just think that the time got right with people he knows and trusts. You know, the Edmonton one, you know, I worked their game last night when it was one of those games, guys, if you've been around sports long enough, you leave after a game and you say something could happen here. The thing is that Ken Holland, he resisted it. He was under a lot of pressure inside the organization and from the fan base to make some kind of change. And, you know, I just think he resisted it. The underlying numbers have been okay, but the last two nights, now they're starting to play some of the games they have in hand. And they can't play like they played the last two nights. I mean, Vegas can beat you. They're a really good team. But the game against Chicago, they had a dominating second period. They outshot the Blackhawks. I think it was 18-3. But the rest of the game, they were listless and they were beaten up and down the ice. And I just think that Holland's desire to try to hold back the forces of change or not do anything rushed or stupid, I just think he ran out of time with that last night and he had no choice.
Okay, so I want to go back on the Montreal part of things because I am intrigued when you say to us, nobody, including yourself, had any clue this was coming. And I'm just... That is intriguing to me because you have your ear to the you got your ear to the ground. You know what's going on in the league, and if you're saying to us you didn't have a clue or anybody else had a clue, how is that even possible? Like, and what does that mean that they've hired somebody that literally nobody would think would be hired?
Well, there were a lot of people making jokes, guys, like the Canadians just hired a peewee coach. Because that's what he did. He was coaching, you know, kids.
Right.
And, you know, that's going to go right to St. Louis. Like there's a guy in the Nashville organization that you should talk to about Martin St. Louis, and that's Bill Wickett. You know, Bill was in Tampa for a long time,
yep.
And he knows Marty really well. And I guarantee to you that he will tell you that St. Louis will know all of that it said, and it's going to go right to the biggest chip on his shoulder known to man. Like, St. Louis fed his entire career on people doubting him. People saying, you can't do this, you're not good enough, whatever. He feeds off that. Now, the interesting thing, guys, was that he only signed a contract until the end of the season. And I was told that it was going to be, you know, let's see how this goes, and then we'll see what happens. We'll all sit down at the end of the season and decide how we feel. But today at his media conference, he said, I'm here for the long run. So, you know, like, I just think, look, like, to me, the answer is this. Hire smart people, and they'll figure it out. Like, you know, is he going to be raw? Yeah. Is he going to be unpolished? Yeah. But he's a great player who had a great mind for the game. And, you know, I think as long as you surround him with people who are willing to fill in the blanks, I think he's got a shot. And from what I understand, you know, he told all his assistant coaches, you know, let's see how you're willing to help. And I don't want to bet against that guy. You guys should talk to Bill about him.
We will.
He would know him better
for sure
than anyone in your organization. But I do not like betting against Martin Saint-Louis. It is a stupid thing to do.
I'm going to seek him out Saturday. Thanks to that suggestion. That's a great suggestion. All right, so let's talk about the Edmonton team that the Predators just saw recently. And we talked to you about them. And they go out, and they do indeed bring in Evander Kane, which you were telling us you were certainly hearing. But that doesn't fix their problems. So how is changing Dave Tippett going to fix their problems? They brought in a guy, yes, can bring some edge to them, but he's known for his offensive prowess. It's everything on the back end. So what's going to change for the Oilers?
I got to tell you, last night what happened was they got scored on in the first two shots of the game. And it wasn't that they gave up the goals, it was how they gave them up.
Okay.
The first two shots were on cross-ice passes. And, you know, I don't know how much you guys read about analytics, like Steve Ballaquet, who's a really good commentator on Rangers games and runs his statistical service. He calls that Royal Road. If a pass crosses the Royal Road, you've got much greater chance of scoring. And, you know, Chicago had two passes go right across the front of the net, and it was 2-0. And, you know, you can look at that and say your goalie's got to make a save, and sure, I'm willing to listen to that argument, but it's too easy. You know, I think that the one thing I think about Edmonton this year is that, especially now, as you go into a playoff game, like, you got to play hard. And you got to be difficult to play against. And everybody makes mistakes, but you got to, A, minimize them, and B, you got to be, if a mistake gets made, everybody's got to try to cover up for it or make sure it doesn't compound into something worse, right? They don't do any of that. And they look kind of listless. And I think that you got to get a save. Yes, that's on the goalie. But I think there's a lot of the things happening in front of the goalie that isn't very good and has to be fixed. I think the other thing, too, guys, is I just wonder if the coaches coming up, Jay Woodcroft is their American Hockey League coach. You know, Dave Tippett, I think he leans on his veterans. I wonder if they're going to say we want some of these kids to play more. But they've got the wildest thing that's happened to them this year is, David, the team's shooting percentage with him on the ice is the lowest it's ever been in his career by a significant margin. And you've got to believe that's going to change because he's too good, but it's weird this year. And normally you're hoping, if you're the Oilers, that you're caving in teams with McDavid on the ice. It's not happening this year, and that exposes a lot of warts.
Predators fell in Dallas last night to the Stars 4-3. Dallas finally gets to 50 points, and just our previous conversations of you telling us that, you know, Pavelski could be on the move possibly, Klingberg could be on the move possibly if they don't get this thing turned around. They're a talented team, but you don't know if it's all going to come together. What do you think is kind of their jumping off point where they, you know, what has to happen from now until the trade deadline for them to say, you know what, it's just not going to happen, it's time to sell?
I think they've got time. Like, we're still, what, 6 weeks to the trade deadline?
A little bit less than, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to let it play out. The one guy I could see them moving sooner than that is Klingberg. I think he's a guy they'd be willing to move now. But, you know, guys like, I think they'd be willing to move Khudobin now. But I think that other guys like Pavelski, like Holtby, if they really want to go down that road, I think they'll wait closer to the deadline. You know, the other thing, too, about Pavelski is he's 10th in the league in scoring.
Yep.
You know, like, you know, I wonder if there's any chance they think about keeping him. I mean, I don't know what it would cost. You've always got to do the risk. You've always got to do the risk analysis, you know, to decide if you want to, what you have to sign a guy for at that age. But he's still a hell of a player, and he's still competitive, and he's still in great shape. You know, that's, I just wonder if at any level they think about that.
All right, we'll come back. More with Elliot Freeman on the other side. Willie's going to get into the Preds side of things and more with Elliot. He's presented by Bank of England Mortgage every Thursday on our show. More with Elliot next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We're back here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're talking with Elliot Freeman, Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet, 32 Thoughts. You got to check this out. And Elliot, on your podcast, I had to say, last week, I laughed out loud when you brought up the name Richard Rodier, because here in Nashville, he is an infamous character from the past. And you remember the whole Jim Balsillie and trying to bring the team up to Canada, to Hamilton, all of that stuff. I will tell you that if Jim Balsillie was public enemy number one, Richard Rodier became 1A because he did an interview with us from a treadmill, and the arrogance and the thing that came through, it really gave, honestly, it gave Nashville sort of somebody to rally against, if you will, because we never talked to Jim Balsillie through the whole process. So he was actually a guy that we should thank for helping save the team, because they, if they had played their cards right, they might have done it. But they kind of stumbled and gave Nashville a chance to rally and get their act together to get the ownership that we have today. But so I was really curious when you brought up that name. What is Richard Rodier doing today?
So, first of all, I kind of laughed at your story there, guys, because there's no when it comes to Richard Rodier, it's not like people lack an opinion, right? You either like him or you really don't like him. Like, there's no middle ground. So, you know, your reaction is not unusual. You know, I think the thing about Richard is he's a really smart guy, but he's really strong in his opinions. And, you know, there's nothing lightweight or subtle about him. Like, everything that he talks about, it comes with like a giant hammer that brings an exclamation mark on the back end. But, you know, I found out last week he was doing some blogging, and he's talking about some very technical matters about the CBA and the negotiations that will eventually become between the players and the league. And he's got some, you know, and he, like, I can't say whether it's right or wrong. What I can say is that you'd be silly not to think he that he doesn't know what he's talking about. He has a lot of intel into it. He's very smart at reading it. He has, like, his opinion is valid. The other thing that's really interesting about him, guys, is that, like, the league can't stand him, and the Players Association aren't big fans of his either, because he left them under really bad terms. So it's kind of funny. Like, it is actually on that level, and he's predicting that there's going to be a massive CBA battle in 5 years, because there's no way they'll be able to repay what they owe the league. I mean, I don't know. We'll see what turns out to be right or wrong. But, you know, the one thing about him is that he's smart, and you shouldn't just discount his opinion.
Hmm. Brad Marchand, accurate suspension? And this latest chapter in his long list of infractions, that type of thing, do you think they got it right on this one?
I don't see how anybody could argue it should have been less. You know, it's the second suspension of the year, And the other thing, too, guys, is you can't do that to goalies. You know, the one incident I've been referring to was 2011 when a Milan Lucic ran over Ryan Miller. And that time the GM of the Buffalo Sabres was Darcy Regier, and he had a really passionate speech about at the GM meeting about how you cannot allow that to happen to goalies. If there's one position on the ice we have to protect, it's goaltending. There's too much at stake. They can't defend themselves. You know, hey, guys, 30, 40 years ago, there would have been a bench-clearing brawl with 600 minutes and penalties and five guys hauled off to jail. You know, we don't do that anymore. So you have to protect the goalies. And I think the fact that Marchand did that to a goalie made his suspension worse because the league says you can't do that to those players. You know, it's interesting. I did have one person say to me that in both the Marchand incident and the Marcus Foligno incident, the knee, where Foligno's having a hearing today, like they felt that the linesman should have been a lot more, I don't know if physical is the right word, but I guess should have leaned more on the players. You know, like they said that, you know, you shouldn't, in that kind of a situation, you should have really gotten in there and, you know, prevented Marchand from going back towards the goalie or, you know, more aggressively taking Foligno off. I just thought that was really interesting that someone said to me that they feel that maybe because there's so much fewer of these incidents, the linesmen treat the players with more kid gloves, and maybe they should have been more forceful so that those incidents didn't escalate. Just an interesting opinion someone said to me.
I want to ask you about the weeks ahead with the trading deadline. There are so many teams that I hear when they get into discussion, it's, well, we'd like to make a trade, but they're up against the cap. And, of course, the centerpiece right now is everybody's curious to see how Vegas is going to get Jack Eichel into the lineup, and they're way over the cap. And my question to you, Elliot, is, you know, are there people in the league, I'm going to just take the Predators, and there's a handful of other teams that have a lot of cap flexibility, which should be an advantage. But it seems like every year, like last year, Tampa Bay was able to work it so that they actually had a lot more salary in play in the playoffs. And it's a sore spot in Nashville because the Blackhawks were able to finagle it. They made a couple of trades to add to their team and then got Patrick Kane back for the playoffs. I'm just really curious what Vegas is going to do in particular. And I'm wondering around the league, are teams saying, how are they going to do this? And are there some loopholes here they're going to find where it makes it sort of an unfair advantage?
Well, I don't have a problem with the unfair advantage thing. I know I may be in the minority on this, but like I'm a guy who always tries to break rules in my various sports pools. So this stuff really appeals to me. Like a couple of the football pools I'm in, they've had to change rules to stop me from doing crazy stuff.
So they have the Friedman rule in your league.
Yeah, there's at least two of them in a hockey pool I'm no longer part of. So like to me, like once you accept that once, and as you guys mentioned, it was Chicago in 2015. Unless you're going to change things, it's very good. It's hard to put that horse back in the barn. And to be honest, from a competitive point of view, like to make your league more interesting, I think it's better for your league. Now, I know not everybody agrees with me on this, and I understand that, but that's the way I look at it. You know, for me, the one thing that Vegas has had is they entered this week fifth in injuries lost, man games lost to injury. And, you know, they can't stay healthy. So that gives them some flexibility. You know, Mark Stone, who's a $10 million salary, didn't play last night. And if he continues to be like that, you know, that gives them, they don't have to do anything. So I think number one is going to be health. Number two is, okay, they have another player right now, Alec Martinez. He's injured. They're pretty careful about saying when he's going to be back. That's $5.25 million. So if he stays out, then they need to clear about another $4.7 million. If he comes back, they're back to $10 million they've got to clear, pending Stone. So I think it's going to come down to when Eichel is ready to play, and they're also being very careful on that timeline. Their next game isn't until Wednesday against Colorado. When they're ready to play, what do they need to do? And then, you know, like, look, like there's been rumors about Dadonov. There's been rumors about Riley Smith. There's been rumors about Janmark. That's just the nature of the business. they're being really careful. Honestly, I think it's going to come down to how much money they have to clear at that time. And those will be the decisions that they have to make.
I guess my only thing philosophically that I come back at you with, Elliot, with your argument, is 2 years ago when you're entering into the pandemic and GMs had to realize, you know, there's going to be some financial fallout here. I don't know if I can count on the cap going up, but yet they still push to the limit. There's so many teams in that boat that they should be penalized, right? They've had a chance to plan ahead, and they didn't. There's some other teams that did plan ahead and have created the right flexibility. I would think that those teams deserve to have an advantage, and you should be closing loopholes on how you get around, you know, I guess what you could say is some irresponsible planning.
I would say this. I get that argument, and I've been told that argument by people before who've heard my position on this and say, you know what? What about the teams that prepared properly? I will say this. It usually comes down, the argument usually comes from people whose teams prepared properly. They say, well, why shouldn't we get our benefit? And I laugh and I say, how would you feel if you were on the other side? And some of them are honest and they're like, yeah, I wouldn't feel this way. And other ones are like, well, I would because I'm a stand-up citizen. I'm like, whatever. Like, you people are all self-interested. So I get it. I do. I've heard that argument, and I'm willing to listen to it. I just know my own, I guess, lack of morals is what I would say. And I also, you know what, guys, too, like, you know, I just think this is a league. Like, we're watching the NBA trade deadline today, right? And I just think the more flexibility you have to create those kinds of moves that get people talking and interested, it's better for your league.
Yeah, it's a good point. So let's bring it back to Nashville, Elliot. They're sitting there with a lot more cap room than a lot of teams. I know they don't want to mess with what they're building. They still feel like they're in that stage, the transition that they're talking about. But, you know, I'm just wondering, because so many teams are up against it and may not have a lot of flexibility, could the Predators get a pretty good player or two for a lesser price because they've got the room to put a guy on the roster if it's the right guy?
I think that could happen, yes. I think it could benefit them. I think if Nashville felt like it too, they could probably get an extra draft pick or a couple to facilitate three-way deals for teams that are tired of the cap. But you may not want to do that if it helps a team that you're competing with for a playoff spot or playoff standings. I just think it opens up the option to them potentially. But yes, I definitely think the teams that have cap space this year that want to acquire people are going to have a huge competitive advantage.
By the way, just for the record, Richard Rodier was on an elliptical when he was doing the interview with us.
And he had to stop. He stopped in the middle of the interview. This really got the blood boiling here. He said, can I pause just for a second while I wipe my brow? I got to wipe some sweat. I'm just on this elliptical machine here.
During the interview, he said that.
While he was in the process of trying to feign that he was going to give Nashville a chance. And, you know, yeah, we love Nashville, and we think they have a great team.
Meanwhile, out of breath during half the interview because he was working out during the interview.
And believe me, we used the sound bites for months afterwards.
I got to tell you guys a story. I once did an interview while I was on an elliptical, and the station called me back and said, look, we don't ask a lot of you. Please never do that again.
Oh, that's fantastic. Elliot, great ending to another great week. Thanks for doing this. Have a good weekend.
Right,
we'll talk
guys.
To you next Thursday.
Have a great weekend.
That was the we love you, bud. Hey, we're glad you're trying to stay in shape.
Yeah, we love having you on.
Please don't ever do that again during the interview. It's a little bit distracting if you've never heard somebody try to do an interview while they're on an elliptical. Elliot Friedman every week brought to you by Bank of England Mortgage. That was outstanding. Willie, tell everybody about QC Kinetics.
All right, let's talk QC Kinetics. And yes, you know, being on the elliptical, that is something that's important, right? You want to stay active. You want to be moving. You want to do your thing. But as you get older, maybe the elliptical is actually pretty good for this. It's not that hard on the joints. That's kind of why people do that. But if you're out there and you love to jog or play golf or things like that, sometimes the joint pain starts coming on and it gets pretty tough. And QC Kinetics wants you to know that if you suffer from chronic joint pain. Don't assume that the steroid shots and the pain pills and the surgeries are the only options that you have out there. They've got a program that's really been working for people and changing people's lives and getting them back out there and getting active. QC Kinetics is the nation's leader in using biologic therapies to repair damaged tissue in those aching joints. They have a great success rate. It's a good plan, and they want you to take a look at it. If you're into this and maybe you're not wild on the surgery or you've tried the steroid shots or things like that, this is something you want to explore. Get the free second opinion from QC Kinetics and think about a life without the pain. Natural biologics, they put directly into the affected joint. It soothes the inflammation, restores the damaged tissue. Find out more by calling 615-249-4024. That's 615-249-4024 for QC Kinetics.
Good stuff as always from Elliot Freeman. Don't forget to go to thegamenashville.com/deals to check out Nashville's best deals. Valentine's Day, just around the corner, Monday to be exact. Keep that in mind. Let's see. Let's look at some of the deals. How about a $50 off Woodhouse Spa? You think that'd be a good Valentine's Day gift? I think so. Half off dining at the Mainstay and Hard Rock Cafe. Well done. Half off Brooklyn Bowl, plus $50 free with purchase of $100 in downtown dollars. Those are all good deals and something to keep in mind for Valentine's Day. Just remember, go to thegamenashville.com/deals for Nashville's best deals. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, I saw where Zach Mettenberger has been added to Alabama's staff as an analyst. How about that?
Intriguing.
Mm-hmm. And I've got to read this, Willie, just because it made me laugh out loud. You know, going back to we've talked today a lot about some of the things are starting to get leaked out. We haven't seen for sure, but now, you know, we're starting to get little nuggets here and there of kind of what the Titans have up their sleeve for, you know, ideas in and around Nissan Stadium. And so we've talked a lot about, you know, the amenities, maybe the playing surface, what's going to be around the stadium. And, of course, I've brought to light about I think it's the wrong decision if you're not talking about putting a roof on that stadium, a retractable roof. And Keith texted in, Willie, and he said, the only person I know who could add a retractable roof to the existing stadium would be Josh Reynolds.
So I thought the ceiling is the roof.
I thought that was a pretty good text from Keith. So, Keith, well done.
Okay,
even though it was a shot at me. Well done. Thought that was
yes.
Good. The big trade, of course, has James Harden being traded for Ben Simmons. The Nets also get Seth Curry, Andre Drummond, and two first-round picks. But it's interesting. The odds makers, the sports books, thinks that Philadelphia is the one who is made out in this deal, because I was just looking at the odds according to the Superbooks out in Vegas. Golden State and Phoenix are the favorites in the West. Milwaukee and Philadelphia are now the favorites in the East. So they
Where's
think,
Memphis, I wonder? How close are they?
Well, Golden State, Phoenix are 9-2. This is to win the NBA championship. Milwaukee, Philadelphia are 13-2. Brooklyn is still right behind Philadelphia at 8-1. Miami 12-1, Utah 16-1, Memphis 25-1.
The West is just they've got better teams out there. The East is so gettable. Philadelphia, I can see making the big jump because Ben Simmons wasn't playing. So anything was better than what they had. Now you get James Harden. So I can see where they make a jump. I just think that the Nets, this is an interesting gamble, if you want to call that, but I think they could end up being a better team if Simmons can be Simmons, and that's a big if.
And we're talking about it too. It's like he doesn't have to take another jump shot the rest of the season if he doesn't want to, because the guys around him,
the fit is there. But there's the mental side. Is he gonna buy in? Is he gonna be engaged, or is history gonna repeat?
Will it's been a problem just everywhere he's gone.
Yeah,
there's a problem at LSU. Well, a problem in Philadelphia. So, who knows if playing with Kyrie Irving helps that, or Kevin Durant helps that. But if Steve Nash can get him to buy in,
yeah,
I like their chances because I like the role players they got. They did not have very good role players before this trade.
Also, we got a tweet from Barrett who said, hey, he wasn't marching with signs, but still having the Oilers. There's only 8 more years till that lease is up. Hashtag Oilers hater forever. There's one thing we do know. Remember, Derek brought this up yesterday. Death and taxes are for certain. Death, taxes, and Barrett hating the franchise here in town will probably be added in that category of death and taxes because Barrett has not come off his stance as the huge Steelers fan. I do wonder, though, in all seriousness, like when we're going to truly know more of what is their vision. What, not only their vision, but what is reality? What are they really realistically going to do? Like, obviously, you're having conversations, but when are these conversations going to be brought to the public light? That's what I would like to know.
Yeah, I would love to see a big presentation where you could go through the entire process, because one thing that's at the, I don't know about the center of it, but one thing that is sort of a marker to keep an eye on is the 2026 World Cup. Nashville is not guaranteed to get a game. They are on the list of cities.
But that decision's coming pretty soon, right? I think it's coming up by the summer, is it not?
This summer?
Yes.
The final list of who gets the games?
Or maybe you get it whittled down to a certain number?
Good question. But I would think that that is part of the equation here, is they have to know, and that you're trying to sell to the World Cup people, this is what you're going to have when you come here 4 years from now.
Well, that's
I'm
right.
Hoping, I mean, something's got to drive this thing. Otherwise, you can sit here and toss around ideas forever and not ever do anything, in theory. So, you know, you would hope that the Titans want to do this for themselves, is invest smartly, get a return on your investment, improve your environment. But the other, hopefully you have a great partnership with the city and it's a win-win. But the World Cup's part of that equation.
And I suspect, Willie, that's probably why some of this stuff is starting to get leaked out there, right? Because those conversations are they're being made, and plus those pitches are being made. And so the more people know, you know, the better chance of things getting out, right? And so I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, they're telling them this, you know, their plans, right? I mean, they're trying to land a spot here, so they have to give them you know, some hardcore information. The question is, you know, along the lines of letting this out publicly, when is the part of this also going to be done? Like, when are you talking about doing this? I mean, you're officially in your off season. Is this stuff going to be taking place, you know, it done in layers? Is there going to be a layer of this going to be done this off season? I mean, when does all this start? I'd like to know that as well.
Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, so I don't know how close they are to actually finalizing all of this because there's so many details of this, but it would be nice to know the plan.
As they say, better late than never, but my goodness, so this is, you know, I don't know why we're still sitting here talking about, I mean, this should have already been in the works, should already been moving forward.
I would agree. I would have liked to have seen them already moving down the road on this, but like you said, I mean, it's well overdue, but listen, there's nothing you can do about the fact that you haven't moved the needle on this for the last few years. Just all you can do is go forward.
I'm going to bring something up to you, and we can run this by – D-Mace will be on the show tomorrow, but I can also bring this up again tomorrow. But I'm going to bring a different little element that we haven't talked about. Actually, something other than the quarterback or the offensive coordinator that I want to run by you before we get out of here. We'll do that to close up shop here on this Thursday here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
The ceiling is the roof.
Well, not quite yet. It's almost over. Derek Mason will be in the saddle with us tomorrow for the entire show as we'll get very close to Super Bowl 56. And we'll get more hot and heavy with that. Lewis Riddick will join us tomorrow. We've got a great guest lineup tomorrow. Mina Kynes will join us. Warren Moon will join us. I mentioned Lewis Riddick. we're going to have a lot of fun. Plus, we're going to throw in You Just Made the List and Pick Six into it. So tomorrow's show is going to be loaded, without a doubt. And we're excited about that. I think we're going to have Anita Marks on, talk a little gambling, all the prop bets out there. So she does a really good job on ESPN's Daily Wager. So we will be loaded to the max tomorrow. Tomorrow's 4 hours will fly by. But I'm going to bring a little bit different element to this on the way out, Willie, that I was thinking about this, and I can't believe I'm bringing it up, but it's kind of like what I was saying about earlier about TNT's broadcast. Like, I can't believe I'm talking about maybe having too much fun. That's out of character for me. Well, considering how big of a fan I am and how great I think he is, as I sit here and wear a Derrick Henry shirt today, you know, one element and one layer to this that we have not brought up is, you know, there's been a lot of blame, and there will continue to be a lot of blame on Ryan Tannehill this offseason on how this season ended. And it'll be painful to watch the Bengals in the Super Bowl. Same thing with the offensive coordinator, but you've got this hire already. Mike Vrabel looks like he's already trying to address that to calm the Todd Downing talk this offseason with the Tim Kelly hire. But one thing that hasn't been brought up, and I hesitate to go there, but you know who else could help them for a team that's now consistently getting to the playoffs every year? The guy we have crowned and deemed the best running back in football, he is. But his playoff numbers haven't been great. Now, I get it. This year, he's coming off being off for, what, 2.5 months. And so I think you get a pass for the 20 carries and 62 yards this past playoff game against the Bengals. But if you go back and look at the game against Baltimore, he wasn't very good in that one either. The Ravens did a fantastic job of bottling him up. I think
so just to clarify, you're looking at the last 2 years postseason. You're not looking at before
yards, that. 40 yards rushing the previous year on 18 carries.
Yeah. So and you're run, going to overlook the domination that he had the year before that.
He did. Now, the run to the AFC title game, we know that he was pretty spectacular in that run. In the, what was it, three playoff wins?
Well, two playoff wins and then the third playoff game.
I mean, okay, three playoff games to get to that. So he was really good. But is there any concern that the last 2 years he has not helped with them getting over the hump of being one and done? Because his numbers have not been good. He has not been the typical Derrick Henry the last 2 years in the playoffs.
I think the first priority is to try to examine what you think you've got in the regular season next year. I think it's a really interesting point that you're making here, because it goes back to small sample size. We're talking about two games over the course of 2 years with Henry and with Tannehill. So in my mind, this is the first time you've hit me with this, and we can go back and look at numbers and all of that stuff. But my first instinct is, anytime you're trying to put a player's value down on one or two games, I say that's too small, even though they're playoff games.
Aren't they judged a little bit harsher?
Of course.
Aren't they judged on a bigger scale?
But I think when you're still evaluating the talent, I think your number one question is, like, for example, with Ryan Tannehill, we can go through all kinds of regular season games where it's not like he's a choker, right? If anything, he's got great numbers in fourth quarter comebacks and in situations like that, game on the line. He's come through a lot of times. He just hasn't in the last two playoff games. And so I think it's interesting that you're putting down as an example an unquestioned player. Nobody questions Derrick Henry.
I know.
But his last two playoff games haven't been good. There are reasons for that. But on one hand, nobody's going to question, like, let's just say the Titans play well enough to get back to the playoffs. Derrick Henry's probably going to have something to do with that. I don't think anybody's going to question, if he's healthy, that he could have a good game, that it's possible. On the other hand, you have a number of people that have made up their mind that if they go back to another playoff game, that Ryan Tannehill not may not, but cannot. It's not physically possible for him to have a good game the next time or a good run the next time they make the playoffs. And I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
But like, how can you know? For a guy that, it's not like he stinks the whole year and then stinks out in the playoffs. You're trying to get a guy who's played pretty well for you, won a lot of games, to play at his best in the postseason. I think history will show you that there's plenty of people that have failed the first couple times, and then they have a breakthrough.
I think I'm bringing it up because of that's exactly why. I mean, it is pretty interesting that Ryan Tannehill is being judged, and in particular,
not just judged. People have made up their mind. He can't take him to the Super Bowl. That's what a lot of people are believing and taking to the mat right now. How can you know that?
And it's really about the last 2 years that has really excelled this, right? The
acceleration,
especially
two games.
But it is interesting, and like I said, it's hard for me to even bring this up because of where I hold Derrick Henry in all of this. But if we're being honest, and we always try to be honest on this show and shoot you straight, if we're being honest, Derrick Henry hadn't exactly shown up the last 2 years either in the playoffs in two games. And it is interesting that, you know, nobody says a word about him. But yet Ryan Tannehill, who, you know, look, I laugh at all this stuff because I tried to tell everybody in this market 2 years ago. Like, he is what he is. Like, I don't think he's any better and he's any worse. Like, this is what he is. You have to figure out ways if he's going to be your guy to work around him.
Right.
And help you to give yourself the most of it. So I just think it's comical how people are like, oh, now you can't. Oh, no, it's the same, folks. It's the same as it was last year. It's the same as it was the year prior to that. Like, nothing's changed just because you've made up in your mind. But it is interesting how nobody talks about, you know, Derrick Henry, because, like I said, he wasn't good against Baltimore. And I think I understand he gets the pass this year. Rightfully so, right? Because he's coming off being out for 2.5 months. But
if anything, they showed too much faith in him.
Yeah, maybe so.
So let's pick up on this. Let's take this further.
I'd like to get Derek to weigh in on it.
Yeah, we'll get his opinion. I'll go back. I'll bring up a couple examples. I think it's a really interesting question. Why is one guy, people are making up their minds that he can't do it, and nobody doubts for a second?
Right.
The other one. Yeah.
I know. That's why I wanted to bring it to light. All right. Like I said, we will have a loaded show tomorrow. We're going to have a lot of fun. 4 hours will fly tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Continue to be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. We'll see you then.